Okay, let me officially welcome everyone to today's Conversations with the Masters call with my host, Laura Fortgang. My name is Mary Allen, and I am a Master Certified Coach, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and your host of the Conversations with the Master series. Before I introduce Laura properly, I just want to welcome all of our live listeners and those of you who may be listening to this as a recording. Thanks again for continuing to spread the word about these Conversations with the Masters calls. We are recording the call, so you can go back and listen again or refer a friend to listen. And if you've pre-registered for the call, you'll be receiving a special follow-up email probably sometime tomorrow. So I want to invite you to clear all distractions, pull out a notepad, and get ready for a host of information about how we can truly raise our prosperity consciousness and really make it in today's world. So I'm just truly, truly honored to invite my friend, my colleague, Laura Berman Fortgang. She is an internationally recognized as a pioneer in the personal coaching field with 20-plus years of experience supporting people to find meaning, purpose, and satisfaction in their lives. Laura is also a best-selling author, sought-after speaker, corporate spokesperson, and an interfaith minister on top of all that. Laura is the best-selling author of 6 books now, published in 11 languages. Her most recent book, The Prosperity Plan, is the one we're going to be talking about here today. But you might also check out The Little Book of Meaning, which was a finalist for Books for a Better Life Award, right alongside the Dalai Lama. Very nice. Another one of her great books, Now What? 90 Days to a New Life Direction, Living Your Best Life, and the very first book that I, got and had autographed from Laura, boy, however many years ago, Take Yourself to the Top. Remember that?
Ooh, let's not give away our age.
It was just a few years ago.
Right. Last year, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and for those of you that don't know Laura, Laura was actually one of the first personal coaches to be featured on national television, including Oprah, the CBS Early Show, NBC's Today, Good Morning America. She had a long stint contributing editor for Redbook Magazine and lots of other major print and digital media, all of which has really helped her truly impact millions of people who want to improve their work and life. And her company, InterCoach, InterCoach, Inc., Now What Coaching, has provided coaching to diverse clients ranging from homemakers, celebrities, Fortune 500 companies, to NASA, and even the Army Corps of Engineers. And her company was voted top 100 companies to watch in New Jersey. And if that all wasn't enough, Laura was one of the first formally trained professional coaches, one of the first to receive the Master Certified Coach credential, and a founding member and early board member of the International Coach Federation. You did all this, Laura.
Are we done yet?
Yeah. Well, I want people to know, who they're really listening to because you're not just, somebody that just decided, hey, let me talk a little bit about prosperity consciousness, and there are so many of those kinds of people out there these days.
Very true. Well, thank you. Thanks for letting everybody know.
Yeah. Well, so let's dig into this. We've had you here as a guest before, and I really wanted to bring you specifically to talk about your latest book, The Prosperity Plan, 10 Steps to Beating the Odds and Creating Extraordinary Wealth and Happiness. So this is your 6th book. Maybe you can start by just, telling us a little bit about how this one came about. How did we arrive here?
This one, unlike all my other books, was actually my publisher pointed out that I could write or should write on this topic. Usually it's me going to them and saying, this is my next idea, this is my next idea. And it came out of the fact that, you know, I had gone, how many years are we talking about now? But anyway, I have one of my kids who's had to deal with some medical issues, and he's fine now, thank goodness.
Mm.
So I had to take my eye off my business for a good long time and deal with medical interventions and other things. And things were chugging along, and then things weren't going the way that I would have liked. And I was thinking, you know, you always think back on, well, what did I do before that really worked? And I thought back to my very early days when I switched from acting, which is my first career, to coaching, and remembered a certain point where I just decided I was going to give up worrying, and I just lived in this energy of possibility, and sure enough, some pretty miraculous things happened, which you basically just heard in the reading of my bio. So I said, you know, it's time to really pay attention to what am I thinking and prosperity consciousness. And so as I got myself more deeply engaged in restudying things that I had did earlier, but things that I did earlier without knowing it was prosperity consciousness, you know, these were just decisions I made on my own. I didn't know there was a whole study of it. So anyway, as I turned things around for myself, we were also in the deepest economic slump in a long time. And I really, when my publisher came to me and said, you know, you've been doing all this work and you're turning it around, everyone needs this help, I said, I wanted to call the book The Recovery Plan, you know, because people are still trying to recover. And the only reason why that didn't happen is because, you know, thinking as a publisher, my publisher said, well, we're not going to be in recovery forever.
Right. True enough. Well, and it could have other connotations, like
dealing with
addictions or something.
Exactly. Which, you know, if anyone else is there on the call or with yourself, Mary, and you've done great stuff, thank you very much. You know, has ever dealt with a publisher with naming a book. I don't think I've ever... No, that's not true. I only won the bottle once. The little book on meaning was always called the little... No, it wasn't. It was called the M word. No, I lied. No, I've not named any of my books.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I haven't named any of them.
that you know, it's so extraordinary. I think it's something a lot of people don't realize, that you know, the publishing world really likes to have a hand in book titles.
They think they know what's going to do best, but, you know, like, well, you know, artists are always fighting for their own voice, and then art and money often argue with each other.
That's right. That's right. Well, there's no question that a lot of people are struggling to find that financial and emotional security in this economy. I mean, it doesn't matter how positive thinking anyone is.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is just all around us about what's going on and people that are getting laid off and all the stuff with real estate. And, you know, so... You know, what are some of the keys to changing these tides of prosperity back in our direction?
Well, you mentioned the word security, and I think that's one of the biggest discoveries that I got out of writing the book. And I interviewed several millionaires for this, too.
I noticed that.
Whether they were in by name or not, didn't matter. Because I was really wanted to get a handle on that. And I found it so interesting that across the board, every person I spoke to who made seven figures, and some of them handsome seven figures, they all said that security, their money is not their security. And now that may sound like, to someone who doesn't have that kind of money, like you might say, well, that's, you know, that's easy to say because they already have the money.
Exactly.
You know, but they all swore up and down that if it all went away tomorrow, their true security is knowing they could do it again, or knowing that they had within them the ability to be resourceful and creative and get back on track. And that really stuck with me as a truth for what's going on today. I mean, yes, we want our mortgages paid and our bills paid, and it would be nice to have retirement savings. But at the same time, the people who are able to not get their feet stuck in cement because of all the fear of all these scenarios are the people who feel secure in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and who are willing, you know, the subtitle of the book is 10 Steps to Beating the Odds. You know, you have to be in the mindset that your security comes from knowing you can.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, some way, beyond the odds and the news and the media, you can.
Well, and how would you suggest for somebody that
maybe hasn't had some huge successes, or maybe they haven't had successes in a while, even some really, you know, smart, degreed people. I mean, there's people of all kinds that have gotten really knocked down. And what kind of suggestions would you have to help shift that belief and mindset of like, gosh, you know, maybe I can't do it?
Well, a lot of it is self-image as well. And I don't think I particularly named one of the chapters that, but it's kind of an overriding theme, is that a lot of times when we, you know, whether we're an academic or we're a professional, like the lawyer, CPA, et cetera, or we're just a mom, or whatever it is, the identity that we've had been entrenched into for so long, that is part of what makes us inflexible in new situations.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of being able to color outside the lines of who you think you are is very important now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of books back, and that's why part of my company called Now What Coaching is that I wrote Now What, 90 Days to a New Life Direction. And although it came out in 2004, it was a reaction to 9/11. Because a lot of people were, suddenly hiring me. I went from being a generalist to being all about career transition. And so as my work has progressed over time, what I still see now is even a more heightened version of the kind of career changes that happened in 9/11. And people trying to knock on doors and redo their resumes and blaming themselves and feeling horrible and dejected and just so sad about the circumstances, when if you really look at it and go, okay, these doors keep closing, no one's letting you back in, you know, that is a message that it's time to change gears.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're deeply entrenched in a certain identity, like, well, you know, I've been a lawyer for 30 years, how could I change now? Or I'm not going to throw this all away, or the just a mom one always comes back to me, women who haven't worked in a while, I'm just a mom. The truth is that when all those doors keep closing, we need to be more flexible about what we think our identity is.
Mm. I think
that's where opportunity comes from.
I think that's such a good point. And I see that too. The people that seem to be really thriving are often taking on something brand new that they weren't even doing a year ago or 2 years ago.
And also I find a commonality is that many times that brand new thing actually has echoes of something they loved to do in the past that they gave up.
Oh, that's a nice clue.
Yeah. It's either a complete shift, like an executive becoming a chef because they had gone to culinary school but gave it up because they needed to have, you know, more family-friendly hours or whatever. And then, or somebody, you know, just kind of dipping into the past and saying, you know, I love this, and how do I bring more of that into the kind of work I do now? And then, I don't know why I'm surprised anymore, but every time I write a book and I'm seeing themes with people, and then they start showing up in my life. And I've definitely caught this fever as well of I did my first musical in 17 years. As I mentioned briefly, I had been a professional actor in my first career, and I had not touched musical theater except for, you know, sing at this bar mitzvah or, you know, Lord, sing at a talent show here. And I did a musical in January.
Wow, good for you.
Thank you. And it, you know, always hard to take a little time out of what you're doing, but it was so much joy. It should have been illegal. It was so much fun. And it ended up, my kids are now all hooked on painting sets and doing stage work, and they love this. But that's just an added bonus. But for me, it made me realize, whoa, you know, I've so long put that piece of me away. You know, people know when they see me speak, they're like, oh, you can see the theater in you. Yeah, of course, I love to be on stage. But gave me an insight by going backwards in my world, like I just said, some of us have to do, go backwards, pick up something I left behind, and it completely opened up my vision for what's possible moving forward.
Mm. Boy, that's so good.
And well, so that's another recommendation for everyone is, if doors are closing for you, don't be afraid to revisit something you used to love.
That's an excellent suggestion. And you talk a lot about right livelihood. Right.
I think we're almost being forced into right livelihood nowadays.
It's like if you're doing something that doesn't feel good and is not producing the results, it's
you know,
you're off track. You're not in right livelihood, right?
Yeah, the universe.
Right livelihood is a Buddhist term from the Eightfold Path of Buddhism, which is sort of the, you know, the transformation that one would go through in their Buddhist training or their Buddhist following. Because it's not, you know, Buddhism is a religion as it's known, but there's no creator God, so it's actually very different than most people think. But anyway, the Eightfold Path, one of the things is right livelihood, and that right livelihood is when you're doing something that expands the possibilities for everyone, that it somehow improves upon the planet or humans or the condition in some way. And when people are down, you know, you think we become more insular, just worried about our own scenarios, but it really is a call to actually become less insular and open up to all the possibilities. And also, just like the stock market corrects itself, this time is giving us all a chance to correct some things that may not have been right livelihood before.
That's so true. Well, and interesting, too, that we tend to stay more in suffering when we are just focused on ourselves, when it's, you know, whether it's our own nervousness or, gosh, you know, are they going to like me, or, you know, how am I going to pay my bills? But as soon as this cause gets bigger than yourself and you think about giving and contributing beyond yourself, number one, the inner suffering seems to calm down, if not completely disappear.
Very true.
So it's amazing concept to really look at, you know, how can your greatest possibilities create the biggest impact for the world around you.
And also in the same scenario, I've seen, you know, when people commit to something like that, you know, there's a dry spell, nothing's happening, and then they find this thing that's bigger than themselves, they get very excited, they're less in fear, less in suffering, and oddly enough, the money starts coming.
Yeah.
Even from some of the old activities that were dried up, it's sort of like, well, you weren't going to get the message of where we needed you if we gave you all the money you needed, so we kind of tied it up for a while. Now that you figured it out, we let you have some money.
Yeah.
have you heard that scenario before?
Yeah, well, and I've often had the, you know, I get those feelings from the universe myself. It's like, okay, if you don't go and just make, you know, you need to make this project happen. It's this is where you need to put your energy. You know, and sometimes you get a sense of maybe a program that you've led many, many times before, but all of a sudden the mojo's not there to lead that program. Yeah, I've seen, in fact, Cynthia Kersey is a great example of this, who recently, do you know Cynthia Kersey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, who, like, she was just describing last fall how she was, yeah, just couldn't pull it together to lead a program she's led countless times with a partner, and that her real passion was about raising money for education, kids in Africa. And she finally just, you know, stepped into her own possibility to go for this, and just, she's like blown away at just how opportunities to speak are showing up right and left, people donating. You know, she's now got her big birthday bash with, you know, 150 who's who coming, and it's all raising money for charity.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you just, the thing that you think, you know, you're doing isn't working out, and then there's something you're willing to step off, you know, a bungee jump for, and you don't know how it's going to happen. You might think you're crazy, but it feels right, and everyone might be telling you you're nuts. But you just, in fact, when my clients tell me that everyone thinks they're crazy, I think, good, you're on the right track.
Exactly.
You know, that tells me that you're totally on the right track. And that's, but think about that energy. This is what we're talking about in the prosperity plan and prosperity consciousness. It's a vibrational energy in your body. It's a recalibration of your being. And when you're scared and depressed and anxious and questioning, that is a much lower vibration than, just as you said, in, you know, imagine Cynthia's example, everyone, as Mary just said, you know, I have this thing that must happen. I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm going to jump off. I'm going to make it happen. And that security, right, that confidence that comes from, you don't know where, because you have no evidence that you can make it happen. And that vibration, that kind of, it's not adrenaline, But it's a little bit of that fear and excitement at the same time. You can't quite tell the difference. That vibration is the vibration of prosperity.
Mm.
And I think part of the there's such a planetary shift going on right now, and I just say this, you know, I said it over and over again for a long time, and I don't have any scientific training to prove it to you. I can just, you know, tell you as an observer of life, an actor who observes people to figure out how to play them, and a person who has observed people to figure out how to help them for the last 20 years, you can just see how, you know, most people are feeling that they're spinning their wheels or things aren't working. But if you really pay attention, people are seeing that they're being called to other things. And I understand how scary that is because we do have to pay our bills.
Mm-hmm.
But it's bigger than us, this shift. It really is, in the sense that, you know, you might as well, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing.
Right.
If you can't make that, you know, resume do what it's supposed to do, then you need to figure out what else you're going to do.
Yeah, and I like that we can, you know, turn to ourselves and really get into, you know, where are those passions and what is the calling that's been nudging you for however many years. I love one of the quotes in your book is, right livelihood is about aligning your actions with your soul's calling.
That's exactly it.
Such a great great pointer for us. Well, and you talk a lot of, also about possibility in the book. And
the first P of prosperity in the whole book is organized as an acronym, yeah.
Oh, you know, I totally missed the acronym. Hello.
Prosperity.
You know what? Duh. Okay. I totally got it now.
That's okay. You were totally pulled in and engaged.
I was.
Like you were reading an acronym.
Each chapter was just so powerful in and of itself. I didn't think it could possibly be in an acronym. Well, so what does it really take to see possibilities where no one else does? You know, how can we, you know, expand this possibility thinking when there's a lot of gloomsday around?
There is. And you know what I love about the word possible? To me, the opposite of possible is not impossible. It's actually, for me, it's probable, because most people walk around with what's probable.
Mm.
You know, it's probable that, you know, I see some of these TV shows like The Fairy Job Mother trying to help people you know, people from all walks of life try to get jobs, right?
Yep.
I remember one time she's interviewing some guy who lives in a car town, I believe, and 36,000 people are laid off. So his attitude, his probability is, well, there's 36,000 other people trying to get the same job I'm trying to go for. Why go? Okay, now that's not uncommon at any level of education and job market, okay? So that's probability thinking. Possibility thinking is, it's possible I'll be the one out of the 36,000 that's right for this. And your language is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, go back to that vibration. If you're walking around, well, you know, why bother? Because there's 36,000 other people. That's one vibration. And the vibration of, huh, it's possible it's me. That puts you out there. That puts you in, you know, bumping into opportunities, I say. Put yourself in opportunity's way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put yourself in the language of possibility, I even had someone in one of my prosperity classes talk about how, you know, the in-laws were coming for Christmas, and she was ready for all the things that were going to go wrong. And instead, she used the prosperity plan to say, it's possible we'll all get along. It's possible we'll have nice conversations. It's possible we'll have fun. And she just kept putting that into her mind, and lo and behold, they had a quite decent visit without the usual potholes and pitfalls. So it is a mental retraining. It is watching your language, because your language causes a certain vibration in your body. So possibility is a language thing, and it's also a vision thing. And, you know, and later on, once you get yourself being more possibility-oriented, then, you do have to be able to make distinctions between what's a real opportunity and what isn't. I mean, you know, it's all possible we can all win the lottery, but you're going to put all your money into it? Probably not, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so you want to use your possibility thinking to overcome obstacles, for sure.
Well, I love your point, too, that really the prosperity plan is all about that mental retraining,
mm-hmm.
and how critical what's between our ears. And there's lots of ways that we can affect that mental mindset. And it's not something we just do once, just like going to, right? And we can't just, you know, just being on this call, while it can totally set people off into a new projectile, it's really what they do after this call and what nuggets they take from it, and that's really going to end up making the difference in the long run.
Right. I mean, you change, you shift your thinking, you shift your language, it shifts what you're willing to do, because what you think is what you're willing to take action on, right? If you're thinking I'm too old, then you're not taking action. If you're thinking it's possible, then you're going to take action. And, you know, I always feel like I'm walking a fine line when we're talking about, you know, rah-rah possibility thinking.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it's not just that, you know, there's a dose of reality in there too, but you know, why not err to the side of possible instead of erring to the side of doomsday?
Right? Well, exactly. I mean, because it's so true. If we really have the attitude day in, day out, I focus on the probability, wow, I'm going to be a statistic, I can't get a job, there's nothing with my skill set out there available. It's like, what are your chances of actually attracting something along the way, and you actually recognizing it as an opportunity? Not so much.
Exactly. And it takes, you know, and energy is energy. So if you're going to put your energy somewhere, won't it feel better to put it in continuing to take action? And I know that that can get hard when you're not getting the results that you want. It's easy to give up. And, you know, I always keep in mind a story that I'm not even sure if it's in the book, because I might have told it afterwards, but I'd heard a story. I think it may have come from the Napoleon Hill teachings or somebody else. That's called, you know, the gold could be 3 feet away, that a young man inherited a gold mine, and it was supposedly there was gold there, because there had been at one time, and he spent all his money on backhoe, and he's digging, and he's digging, and he's digging, and months after months he's not hitting gold, and finally decides, you know, while I can still get out, let me sell this place. He got out, you know, while someone else might still think there's a possibility of gold there, and the next person who bought it happily got back into the backhoe, and within 3 scoops, 3 feet, they hit the gold. So the guy had just given up 3 feet away from gold.
Mm.
And, you know, it's hard to know when to give up. And people ask me all the time, like, well, when do you give up on a dream? When do you declare that something's not working? And I think that you never truly give up on the dream. It's just that it may change form. And we, you know, we have that flexibility that I was talking about around identity, or the way that something might happen. Those are the pieces we need to be more malleable with.
Right. Yep. Well, and I think you point in the book too, it seems like you quoted maybe Seth Godin about, you know, when you know when to give up on a dream.
Yeah, he wrote a small little book called The Dip. Which, I just love that book, because basically it's very simple. It's like, when do you give up? You know, if you're no longer willing to be the best at what you do, give up. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very powerful. It's very simple. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
You know, if it doesn't fill you with so much passion that you just want to give it your all and be the best at it, then move over.
Right, exactly. And that doesn't mean that in the course of, you know, your dream, my dream, anyone's dream, we don't have days where, yeah, we feel like throwing in the towel, but it's where you spend the majority of your time.
Right.
Not worrying so much about the bleeps, but, you know, where is that predominant vibration as it relates to your dream?
Right. And when I first started my one-man coaching practice at a little, you know, 3-foot-wide desk in my bedroom, I remember the day that I decided to shift my energy. I was 2.5 years in, and it was, you know, a lot of suffering, a lot of like, oh, I got 5 clients, I lost 2, I got 10, I lost 8, you know, just that constant back and forth and not knowing where the next thing was coming from. And I just made this declaration that, you know what, you are good at what you do, and just do it. You know, stop counting, stop thinking, stop worrying, just do it. And it was like, it was so powerful. It was like, I remember it so clearly. And from that moment on, I really didn't have to worry again.
Mm.
It just started happening.
Mm-hmm.
So the energy that we lose in suffering and questioning
and worry,
you know, it's human, and it's just not worth your time.
Mm-hmm. So true. So true. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, so people that are here listening going, okay, I'm totally up for mental retraining. I will do anything. I'm tired of suffering. I'm tired of, you know, whatever direction things are going. I'm willing. What are some of the practical things that we can do to really begin to shift that mental energy?
Yep.
And focus. What are some of the key things we can do?
Well, changing your words, we already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure you're speaking in, you know, not in ifs, but in whens. If this happens, no, when it happens. But also, you know, by no means did I invent visualization, but visualization is a great tool. Visualizing, seeing yourself with the result already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I happen to just have fallen into this pattern of doing like a mental scope of my entire property from front to back, and I kind of start at the top, I start at the front, and I sweep my attention through the house and all around and then through the back, and I see each thing that I want to improve, or as I go through my children's rooms, what are the things that I want to support with more income for them. You know, just imagining in this visualization just everything as I want it to be. And a couple of months ago I saw in Parade magazine, Parade, most people get it in the United States, but some people get USA Today Weekend and some people get Parade.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, insert the newspaper. And there was a woman on the cover, it's like how I visualized $112 million. And lo and behold, this woman would visualize several times a day, like what she was wearing and the exact amount of money that she was going to get, $112 million. And in her case, it was the lottery. And in her case, she did eventually win $112 million.
Oh, my gosh.
And she had, you know, bought herself a couple of really crazy big cars and then used the rest, well, whatever, you know, it came in. I don't know if she chose the lump sum or not. But she wanted to start a movie production company making films for women just like her, who she felt were not represented in mainstream films. And, you know, that's one heck of a story. And but that's the power of seeing it. And, again, you know, when we don't get results right away, we might give up. But you just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I often compare this process to weight loss. Happen to be a member of Weight Watchers, a card-carrying member, thank you very much. And, you know, and when most people see me, like, where do you have to lose weight from? But, you know, we're all relatives.
Exactly. I was going to say, Laura.
I weigh 20 pounds more than I did on my wedding day, like most people. But anyway, so I went through this period where I could not lose any weight, and I just made up my mind to just see myself the way I wanted it to be and not give up. Like, don't give up just because you're not getting results. And I had to really do this for several months, but just don't give up. Don't wreck it just because you didn't get what you wanted. Don't wreck it. Just keep going, keep going, keep going. And lo and behold, I've kept off 9 pounds for like 6 months now.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
And you're doing it the easy way.
Like, what do you mean?
It's like really, I mean, you know, really being in that energetic vibration of, what, 9 pounds less than you were.
Yeah.
Really attracts probably the food choices you make and you know, and how you move your body and all the things that just make it much more effortless as opposed to efforting your way to losing 9 pounds.
Right. And for everyone, I mean, the point just being you don't give up. You don't give up on the visualizing. You don't give up on the possibility language because right away it didn't work. You know, these are permanent changes, just like the Weight Watchers people say, right? It's not a diet. It's a lifestyle change. And it's so funny to be a coach and go to Weight Watchers, but if you want, you know, if you have to go have your coaches in the places where you don't have your stuff worked out, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I'm sure like you, I have several coaches in a variety of areas, and I'm always on the hunt for more coaches.
Oh, I love it.
It definitely makes life easier, and
it keeps you honest.
Absolutely, and focused.
Yeah, so you don't stop. You know, you stay in possibility language, you do your visualization, you don't stop, and you have to give up suffering, because suffering can be a religion for people.
No kidding.
It's so habitual. And, you know, I can attest to this. You know, that period where I couldn't lose the weight, I had something going on that doctors could not figure out, but it did dissipate, thank goodness. But I spent several months just no energy, fuzzy head, couldn't lose weight, probably hormonal. And I just remember during that time, you know, it's so easy to want to quit. It's so easy to want to, whatever you're up to, business, career change, dieting, whatever. Our subconscious, like, just wants you, is that lead in your butt that doesn't want to take you to the gym, right?
Mm-hmm. I've had that.
Right. So it's the constant battle, and it's the constant thing of saying, okay, well, what's the little step? You know, you just keep on making it smaller until you can get it. You know, so, you know, funny thing about the prosperity plan, and I always say to people, is that, you know, it's not a hardcore money advice book. Because, dieting and money, we all know exactly what we need to do. Eat less, exercise more. Spend less, save more. We know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the why we don't do it part that needs the most work.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I know one of the ways that we suffer quite a bit, you talk quite a bit about worry in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And worry is a great self-torturing mechanism, is it not?
It is. And I had such a big aha about worry writing the book. Who writes books for the public? We write them for themselves. Let's just put it out there. And hopefully you can learn something too. But what I learned about worry, especially around money, is that there's a collapse distinction there about being responsible. Worrying means you're responsible. You know, you care that you did this, or you care that you don't have enough saved, or you care and you suffer, so therefore you're so responsible. And wow, that's a fallacy. And so to recognize that worry is an energy that brings you down, that worry hurts your adrenal system, that hurts your immune system, that, you know, there's a quote, and I don't know who said this, but worry is like a good rocking chair. You know, it gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere.
Oh, I love that quote.
You know, that it does. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. So choose something else to do.
Well, so what kind of tips do you have for the chronic worriers here on the line that are really caught in that pattern and have maybe collapsed the distinction and thinking, well, I'm just being responsible and worrying about the future and so forth? What are some tips to break that nasty habit?
You know, I'm just going to say this first, and I don't mean to be flip, but this could be a therapy issue for somebody, you know, to get some short-term therapy to figure out, you know, why do you worry? You know, I thought it was being responsible. You know, someone else might think they worry because in their household it was so out of control that worrying gave them something to do so they didn't have to deal with what was going on in their household. You know, you don't know why you took on worry. It probably is a coping mechanism that you've had for a long time. And the first question is that coping mechanism working for you? Does it give you a result and a benefit? You know, and if you don't like either one of those answers, you know, the result or the benefit, then it's time to start retraining your mind. And I'm someone who in my 20s retrained my mind like I was trading out a grain of sand for each thought and trying to get a new grain of sand that was a good thought. As a result of a 3-year nervous breakdown. Depends which book you read. You may not know about that one.
We didn't mention that in the highlights.
No, we didn't. But it's in Living Your Best Life and the little book on meaning, should anyone be listening. And, you know, I was in my 20s, and I literally had to change out every thought. So hopefully you don't have to do that. But it really is an exercise of heightened awareness to recognize when you're worrying. And as a lifelong worrier myself, I've kind of learned how, you know, let my creative imagination decide on the worst case scenario, create a solution for that worst case scenario, and then let it go.
Mm.
And I personally have been able to learn how to let it go most of the time. You know, if you have children, that becomes a little tougher. You worry about your kids.
Mm.
But, you know, when it's worry about your circumstances, it's, you know, we somehow think we should be rewarded for worrying. Of course I'm worried. How am I going to pay the mortgage? Well, instead of worry, we need innovation, creativity, and a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And those right brain activities can't come from worry, because worry and fear are located, I'm pretty sure my research is right, on the left brain, because it's logic. It's linear sequential thinking of if this doesn't happen, that will happen, or if this happens, that will happen. Okay, so left brain logic is where worry and fear take its root. And all our solutions are on the other side of the brain. So we need to find a bridge. And so when we talk about those little messages and, you know, is this a calling to something else, that is a call for calm so that you can hear what the solution is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for a lot of us, we may not like that solution that we're hearing. I remember a story long ago from my 9/11 days where I had someone who, you know, just a tough, tough business lady, sales consultant, made a lot of money. Everything was drying up after 9/11. She came to me. She had known me from before. I'd coached before, and she came back to say, you know, I need your help getting my business back off the ground. And I said, yeah, I just have a feeling it's not about, you know, working harder on this business. She's like, well, that's what I want you to do. You want the job or not? And I was like, yeah, okay, fine. But things just went worse and worse and worse. And finally one day I really had to give her a reality check and say, you know, look, you know, it might be time to get a job. And she's like what? I don't know. It just came out of my mouth. I said, like waitressing or bartending. And she was, like, horrified. But it made her tell the truth. The truth was she'd felt a calling to become a minister for many, many years.
Mm.
But she could not justify, you know, how am I going to do that? I'll have no money. How am I going to hold my lifestyle? Blah, 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 blah. So, once again, the universe took everything away to get her to listen to the little inklings. You know, I can't go back to school. I don't have the money, da, da, da. And I said, well, why don't you just go talk to a few seminaries and see what happens? So two of them offered her full scholarship, and one offered her a full scholarship and a place to live. And
wow.
Then it's like, okay, now what are you going to do? So now she is a minister, full-fledged minister in here in New Jersey somewhere, and, you know, we'll look back in a minute, but as I had kind of alluded to in other stories, as soon as she said yes to the calling and the scholarship showed up and the free housing showed up, her business came back enough to actually support her through part of the process.
Mm.
And it wasn't all stars and stripes and bells and whistles. It was hard, but she's on the other side and she loves her life. And you know, those are the, you know, we don't like sometimes what the right brain is telling us or that intuitive inkling. It's like, what do you mean? I can't go be a minister.
Yeah, right. It's like, how will I make money with that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, I just had such a big aha about why, you know, why when we're in worry and fear that it does put us in such a stuck place. And it just never had occurred to me that this is why, of course, I'm all about inner peace, but I do know the more people spend time in a place of inner peace and that place of connectivity, creativity flows, and this is really where, you know, all the essence of life can emerge.
Absolutely.
Oh.
And it can be the scariest of places because it's not going to make logical linear sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's just not. And, I mean, part of me is in pity for all of us in that, and part of me looks at this whole economic crisis as like there is a silver lining. You know, there is this little, you know, rumbling happening everywhere. I mean, look at it in our weather patterns and in the governments and, you know, all the rallies that are going on around the world and all the shifts. And, you know, I don't like reading the cover of Time magazine either that says the United States is, you know, headed to the bottom. I don't like to hear any of that either. And I'm not sure if that's true. But there's, you know, there's no question that there's just a huge rumbling going on. And so when I, you know, went to name this the recovery plan, I didn't think I was too off track with that because we need to recover a new currency. You know, the currency of money is such an interesting phenomenon through the history of the world. And I think that right now we're in this calling for a currency of spirit, you know, like a spiritual currency within each of us that then has a domino effect in how we go out in the world. And, you know, just it's just such a strange thing, really. You know, I think I'm a second generation American. My dad was first generation American, and his father came over on a boat at 16 years old, you know, and would my grandfather have ever thought we lived in a time where people cared about, you know, being happy at work and, you know, wanted to be fulfilled and live their purpose? I mean, you know, he'd be like, what do you mean? You put food on the table. You do whatever you have to do. So we're kind of seeing right now like a need of both kinds. You know, we all need to do what we need to do. But we've evolved to a place where we don't want to shut off our souls and our whole being to do what we have to do.
Right. Oh, I couldn't agree more. Well, and one of the things you talk about in the conversation about worry is we can replace that really with gratitude.
Oh, I'm so glad you remembered to bring that up.
Yeah, so I totally want to talk about, I wrote down so many quotes from that chapter. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite, gratitude and prosperity are like peanut butter and jelly.
Did I write that?
You did.
Oh, awesome.
There are so many good quotes you have on this.
You can probably share them with me.
Well, and here's another good one. Worry and gratitude cannot vibrate at the same time with a positive result.
There you go.
Another so really
they cancel each other out.
Right. Yeah. Well, and so you do talk. So if one of the things, right, if we're on this track of worry and that's where a lot of vibration is going, one of the places we can direct our mind is to gratitude. And maybe, you know, speak to a little bit about, you know, why gratitude is so important and how we can, you know, what the impacts of focusing on it will bring us.
Sure. Well, as we talked about having to shift out those granular thoughts and replacing them with new ones, gratitude would be the best one to get started with and probably the overriding one. I start that chapter with a quote by Mary Manon Morrissey. She's a minister, came out of Oregon and a national speaker, and she's a mentor of mine. And that quote is, gratitude is a vibration that is in harmony with prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, talk about that vibration, that heightened calibration in your body. When you're in worry, you are not in a heightened calibration. You're like sinking. And gratitude, you know, not just the thanksgiving of thank you, I have a home, and thank you, I have people who love me, but the deep gratitude for the privilege of being alive.
Mm-hmm.
And walking through the world with that gratitude opens the seas of opportunity in a very different way than worry and fear. And gratitude shifts that vibration, you know, and sometimes it feels like, you know, when you're first starting to practice gratitude, it's like, oh, you know, it's so airy-fairy.
I know. I remember when I took on gratitude practices, too.
Oh, you know, it's so airy-fairy, and you so don't mean it because I can't pay my mortgage, so how can I be grateful? But when you find it, you start to recognize how you need to turn around your thinking. And I mean, I do a gratitude practice morning and night. It doesn't take long at all. It's just like I wake up and I go, thank you, you know, for this, and this. And going to bed, thank you for this, and this. And it's just, oh, you know, it makes me sleep through the night versus when one worries, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's like putting on a different pair of glasses, a different lens. And it helps you move through the conflict in an easier way.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can give a nice concrete example.
Okay.
All right. This is someone that I know, not a client. What's going on right now? A big trust was broken in their in her marriage, and it just was added. I added up from too many other things, and she had to pull the plug on her marriage. That was it. It came out of left field. I mean, it was just devastating. It meant moving halfway across the country to pick up a new life, and you know, like just so much loss and so much loss and so much loss. And now it's 6 months, and there's all kinds of opportunities happening for this person's little seedling of a business idea that's been on a shelf for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she has been doing a gratitude practice this whole time, and, you know, She was not looking to be divorced. She was not looking to be single and moving to a new city. None of that. But insisted with herself on gratitude. And, you know, now feeling a little better and dealing with the loss better, there's so much opportunity showing up in this person's life that wouldn't be there if all those other things that seemed horrible were not in place. So think of a time in your life, everyone who's listening, where something happened that just was a tragedy or it seemed like the most awful thing that could happen, but as the story evolved, if it hadn't happened, there's something even more wonderful that would not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good way to get a grounding in gratitude.
Boy.
That we don't know the whole story. We don't know how the movie's going to end. And probably one of the best ways to have a good outcome to your movie is to be in gratitude for everything that shows up along the way, even if you don't understand why it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I couldn't agree more. I know a lot of people from The Secret. I think it was Rhonda Byrne who shared that she, before she gets out of bed each day, I don't know if she's still doing this, but before she gets out of bed each day, that she connects with that place of gratitude so much so until she has tears that come to her eyes.
Wow.
And I think there's another secret star that when he gets out of bed, it's right foot is thank, the left foot is you, thank you, thank you, like all the way to the bathroom.
To the coffee.
Yeah. Right, exactly. The wake-up call. But it really is, gratitude is that. I like your quote. Gratitude and prosperity are like peanut butter and jelly.
I'm going to remember that.
That's such a good.
You know, and I put it out there too to all the, you know, the. I know there's so many busy parents out there, and I know my meditation practice is not what it used to be before I had children. It was a much more solid meditation practice, but the gratitude practice is something that anyone can do, even with very little time. And I do it very similarly as to Rhonda, but I don't cry all the time. But it's like, you know, the minute the eyes open. A new day. Thank you for another day. Thank you that I have this loving family, most of the time when they're not trying to kill each other. Thank you, you know, that we have a warm home. You know, you go through the whole list. It's way better than waking up and going, oh, my God, I forgot the car. I have to get this or I have to get that. And ending the day the same way. And a lot will get worked out in your sleep when you go into sleep in a better way.
Mm-hmm.
So gratitude, you know, that is the vibration. That's the prosperity vibration. And then as you move along the process, it's also having an idea that you love.
Mm.
You know, sometimes people think, well, you know, I know right now there's a trend in the coaching field to make millions.
Yeah.
No one wants a six-figure practice anymore. They want to make millions of dollars.
Right, you're right. That is a big trend.
Right? We can have a whole other conversation about that. But,
yeah.
You know, so, hey, that might be your idea, that just you are so in love with that idea. You have this burning desire, as Napoleon Hill would say, right? And, hey, great. But for some people, it's not going to be that. It might be something else. It might be, like Cynthia Kersey, the children in Africa she wants to educate. Or it might be, you know, fairness somewhere in the world. Or, you know, for me, a lot of times, as much as I love my business and I'm in love with ideas about what I want to do there, sometimes I'm in love with the idea of being a great parent. I mean, really, that's really the most important thing to me.
Hmm.
You know, so those bigger ideas that you're in love with, those are the ones that are going to fuel all the action you have to take. So, you know, if you're unemployed right now, getting a job is probably not the big idea that wakes you up in the morning. It's the anxiety that wakes you up. But put something beyond that, whether it's, you know, what happens when the money is back. You know, thinking about why you want money, not just to pay the mortgage, but why do you want money? And fall in love with the why. It gives you so much more impetus than the action you have to take to get there. Then the action becomes easy.
Yep.
One more quick thing. I know we're running out of time. But you know how anybody on these calls ever gone to a job interview, they didn't want the job, or they went on a date when they knew they already had a boyfriend, you know, that they just met, so they really didn't need to go on this date.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know where that one came from, but that detachment, we always do our best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to market yourself, but, oh, you know, Mary needs me to market for her. I'll get on the phone, right? So it's so much easier when it's an idea that just doesn't threaten you in some way. So I think sometimes it's better to, you know, have this idea that you love be so big and ridiculous that you can almost, you know, not want it so bad, because we all do better when we don't want something so bad.
Ah, right. I love that we're circling back, talking to detachment, because when we're in attachment, there's like a resistance to not having it, and we kind of clog up the energy.
It's true. So, you can't want things too bad and then actually screw it up.
Right. So we can take all this mental focus and visualizations, but if we get way too attached, any tips for kind of visualizing in kind of that loose, detached way so that we can optimize this energy allocation?
Yeah, it's such a dance between wanting and being detached from it and being open to what is supposed to be, but yet have your own ideas. It is a dance. And I think probably something I might have learned from Louise Hay a long time ago doing her tapes is that you just see it in like a pink bubble when you're done with your visualization, and just, you know, that, like, you know how you blow a bubble out of the wand and it kind of like, bye-bye, you know, just then let it go.
Love that.
You know, and take your action and do what you have to do and be inspired by the big idea, but it's like, okay, that or something better.
Love that. Oh, the pink bubble. We'll just send it all off into the universe.
Send it all off in a pink bubble.
Oh, goodness. Well, we're getting close to the top of the hour. I also wanted just to have you have, I don't know, can you give us a little sum up of how integrity determines our wealth or not?
Oh, my gosh.
I know that's a whole other big conversation.
Yes. Well, you know, integrity moves with our state of awareness. You know, if anyone watched The Sopranos on HBO, you know, not the most highfalutin show for anyone who's into new age and self-help, but Tony Soprano was starting to feel out of integrity being a mobster. Started having panic attacks and going to a therapist, right? So here's doing these terrible things, but he became out of integrity with it, and started to suffer. So you have to look at places where are you out of integrity? Are you doing things you don't really want to do? Are you out of right livelihood? Are you in relationships that are not doing good for both of you or not bringing out your best? So integrity, you know, does shift with each individual, but at the same time, only you know. And your foundation for whatever you want to create is going to be stronger when it's in integrity. If you want to now use the, you know, construction terms of integrity, you can't build a house on a rotted frame. But once it has a solid frame, you can decorate it any way you want. So whether it the integrity be with your money, you know, trying to do your absolute best to stay on top of your money life, or the integrity is in every part of your life, you know, we're looking for wholeness of mind, body, and spirit.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of even loops us right back to where we were beginning, which is coming back to, you know, what is that soul's calling and being in integrity with yourself, even from a purpose standpoint. Wow, so many good things here. I think we could go on and on. Well, I want to recap a couple kind of key things for people to sink their teeth into with the prosperity plan. So we need to really be paying attention to our language, the visualization, so key. I made an extra big note about don't stop. Don't do this just once. You know, continue
right
with this again and again. No giving up.
And read any kind of stuff that keeps you in that vibration. You know, read that before you go to bed, or read that before you rush with your day. You could read the prosperity plan, but also, you know, any of those kind of books that put you in that vibration for the day.
Oh, yeah, not only that, it inspires you then to step into that action. And interestingly enough, as I was reading the book, of course, all this week I've been committed to every night I'm going to take, you know, a little bit of time and just, you know, play in visualizations. I know how well it's worked for me in my life in the past. And ironically enough, I was thinking about, thinking about media and some of the things going on with even Charlie Sheen. And lo and behold, the next day I get an email from the Chicago Tribune that wanted to know about when I was working at the Holiday Inn and Charlie Sheen was filming a movie there, and, you know, she's like all excited to promote my business. I'm like, dang, this stuff works.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did they know that you had worked at such a hotel at that time?
You know what? One tweet in the You know, once somebody was tweeting about Charlie Sheen and somehow I got going back and forth, you know, one tweet about that I was at that hotel.
Whoa.
You know? Unbelievable. But it really worked. So bringing yourself back, stopping the suffering, embracing gratitude, finding the idea you love, detachment. And two things before we wrap up. Love to hear some final thoughts, but even before final thoughts, I understand you have an offer for the coaches here on the line, because you've got a special program that you're doing, I think, on Monday.
It starts on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a 5-part business series, and you can come to one, or you can come to two, or you can come to all, and there is a price break to come to all of them. And Monday is how to build that 6-figure practice, and the following ones are about how to craft a speech you sell product from the stage, how to do a consultation in 20 minutes or less. There's 5 magic steps that I've discovered over 20 years. So each one has a topic that, you know, helps people to build that practice, and you can find those at laurabermanfortking.com/business.html.
Fantastic.
Or go on my like page on Facebook, and you'll find out more about it there.
Fantastic. And I think we'll include a link in the in our follow-up notes that will get sent out tomorrow. So people that are eager to take advantage of that, will include that as well. So it'll be real easy for people to take advantage of a pro like yourself who's been through it all. And, you know, you're one of my favorite resources to tap into as a coach. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah.
And the prosperity plan is all wrapped into those classes because it's focusing on the shifts you have to make as well. And if people go to theprosperityplan.net, you'll find more about everything we've talked about today.
Beautiful. And I highly, highly, highly recommend this book. I so loved reading it. And as you can see, I've got quotes all over the place. I'm going to be tweeting about you all over the place because these are such quotable quotes. Why don't we just wrap up? What are some final thoughts to leave people with as it relates to increasing their prosperity consciousness?
Well, the final thought I want to leave you with is one that we didn't cover yet, which is about you being you is enough to bring in that prosperity that you're looking for.
Mm.
I think a lot of times we still think we need another degree or a different training or a better website or, you know, a better marketing plan or whatever. And the truth is you are enough to get that level of prosperity. And probably being truer to you is more likely to make it happen than trying to keep up with everybody else.
Mm. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that was one of the things I was hoping we'd cover. So we got that squeezed in the final hour as well.
We were on the same page. We're on the same mental flip.
Exactly, exactly. And I agree. It's not about having to change yourself to attract greater wealth. It's more of you being you. So, Laura, thank you so much for being here once again. I know our listeners took loads of notes and will probably be coming back and listening to this one again. Just thank you so much for the work that you're doing in the world. And
I bow back to you.
Thank
you for yours.
Thank you. Thank you. And to everyone here listening, thanks for being with us here today. And we will see you on the next call. Look for those follow-up notes coming soon. And I'm going to open up the line so people can thank you. Get the lines open. Thank you, Laura.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Bye.